ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music and more.
But first, the Pacific is, it's seeing the most extraordinary influx of foreign players. Latterly, surprising entrants like the UK and South Korea. And at the same time, of course, the old guard, the US, China, are digging in. Everybody, it seems, wants to be a bestie of the Pacific. Now, we're joined for our monthly Pacific update by analyst Tess Newton-Cain from Brisbane's Griffith University, and by Sean Jacobs, who's also in Brisbane but born in PNG. Sean's a writer and policy analyst and has just written on the significance of the recent Biden and Blinken interactions with PNG. Tess, we'll come to Sean in a bit on the greater US involvement in that country, but would you tell me first all about the countries of your origin, the UK, and its renewed interest in the region? It does seem so far away.
Well, you're quite right, Philip. It is far away. And we saw, and you know, I'm old enough to remember when the UK, you know, made quite a significant move away from the Pacific and, you know, drew down its aid program and closed down high commissions. And in the last couple of years, we've seen quite a significant reversal with high commissions being reopened and new high commissions. We saw the foreign minister of the UK in the region not too long ago. He did have to cut that visit short, but he was in the region, including in Papua New Guinea. So it is quite a marked resurgence. I think AUKUS partnership has something to do with that. I think also now that the UK is no longer a member of the European Union, it has to have its own, or it feels that it has to have its own presence in the region rather than being part of Team Europe, which is also a very significant player.
So Tessa, it still seems odd that the PNG and the UK signed a security agreement.
It does seem odd, and, you know, it'll be interesting to get Sean's thinking on that as well. I mean, everybody kind of wants a security agreement with PNG and with other Pacific countries, as we've seen. You know, we've seen conversations with Solomon Islands and Vanuatu, and particularly with PNG. I think, you know, the kind of elephant in the room, or not elephant in the room, is that when I talk to people in the Pacific and when I listen to them, I certainly get my sense is that they have a fairly healthy skepticism about this, and they will say to me, well, it's all because of China. If China hadn't taken such an interest in the region, these other partners wouldn't be wanting to either come back, as we've seen on the part of the UK, or come in afresh, as we're seeing this week on the part of South Korea.
Yes, now try and decode that for me. What's South Korea's interest?
Well, we've just seen yesterday and the day before the inaugural South Korea Pacific Leaders Forum. So leaders went from the region to South Korea, and they've met in both Seoul and in Busan for a leaders summit, particularly focused around the blue economy and maritime and fishing issues. Again, South Korea has had a small presence in the region. It is a dialogue partner of the forum. There has been a small amount of aid into the region from South Korea, but now they are looking to increase that. And I think it's fair to say that they are being encouraged to do that by bigger players such as the US and Australia, through mechanisms such as the Partners of the Blue Pacific, which is about bringing together like-mindeds to secure the region as a whole.
There might be some joint concern too about Japan's plan to release water from the Fukushima nuclear plant.
Well, yeah, I mean, we know that that is a significant concern for many in the Pacific. Interestingly, China has been very vocal on that issue as well. And yes, you know, obviously South Korea has a say in that as well. And, you know, once they're talking, you know, these maritime issues, the nature of fisheries and oceans and all of that sort of thing is that there are no borders. The sea doesn't recognise where the borders start and stop. So it's very much a shared responsibility and a shared resource. And I think it's part of how countries like South Korea seek to establish their interest in the region and their commonality with the region is by referring to these shared interests.
So this was the third summit in a week between Pacific Island leaders and a larger economy, one of which is India. And enter stage left, Sean Jacobs. Let's look at India, please, Sean. What's it been doing and how does the Pacific view India?
Yeah, evening, Philip, and thanks very much for having me on, and evening, Tess, as well. Yeah, look, it's certainly been an active week. I was just thinking, actually, before I came on, I don't think I've ever seen a time when we've had that influx of foreign players into the region or there's been this strategic focus on the region. India's ascension was met, I think, with a lot of optimism. I think if you look, you know, for example, at Papua New Guinea and the reactions of James Marape, the Prime Minister, on the tarmac when he playfully sort of tried to kiss Modi's feet was quite playful, but it just, I think, was symbolic of a huge amount of respect that India is walking into in the Pacific Islands and PNG in particular. So Modi was there to convene the forum. This is the third forum for India-Pacific Islands cooperation. And I think, you know, again, I think there was a reservoir of optimism and warm reception. I think the Pacific Islands and PNG in particular, you know, they look to India as an advocate that isn't China. It's a former colony, so it sort of gets the rhythms and the bearings of emerging from that post-colonial challenge, and it's able to walk the talk on the international stage in forums like the G20 and the G7.
You know, it's interesting, in all the times we've been discussing the Pacific, we've rarely raised the issue of the diasporas. We've got a significant Chinese diaspora across the region and, of course, a consequential Indian one. So in your view, Sean, India is seen as a potential voice for the global south.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. I think, you know, with especially in forums like the G20 and the G7, that's, you know, those are forums that were access for Pacific states that they could only sort of dream of. And I do think there's an affinity there. Like I mentioned, being a former colony, they do see India as being able to elevate the voice of the Pacific in that global north, and especially in those forums as well. And, you know, importantly as well, being able to look at a package of assistance. They announced a 12-point action plan during the forum as well that's quite sort of humble in its approach, but I think will be quite strategically targeted in terms of some of the outputs that it might be able to achieve in Pacific Island states.
So, Sean, PNG, the country of your birth, has had Modi and also US Secretary of State Blinken come to say hi.
That's right. And obviously it was an air mess with President Biden visiting, which would have been, you know, hugely significant. But look, we can't go past the signing of the US-PNG Defence Cooperation Agreement, which was absolutely hugely significant. And that was a 15-year agreement that covers a range of areas from military training and exercises, capacity building, you know, humanitarian and disaster response. And as Marape has noted as well, the build-up and some presence of US forces in PNG and in PNG waters over the next 15 years.
It's very different from, well, take your own memory and experience back to 2010.
Absolutely, that's right. So I can remember when I was working with the National Capital District Commission with the Governor Powers Parkhop, and I can remember when US Secretary of State Hillary Clinton visited, that's right, Philip, in 2010, and just the fanfare that generated and created. And I just remember thinking actually at the time that, you know, PNG hadn't received any sort of significant government figure of that stature. I think you'd have to go back to General MacArthur in World War II. And obviously that's changed. Vice President Pence visited PNG for APEC in 2018, And then, of course, you've had U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, who's been back to the region twice in as many years. So, yes, we've got an influx of foreign players and a focus on New Guinea like never before, but also the Pacific.
Australia was a bit miffed when we missed out on our Biden trip because of his debt ceiling dramas. Was there disappointment or more in the Pacific?
I think so. I think whatever disappointment there was, it would have been mitigated, I think, by Modi's visit in particular. But also, I don't think you can go past having, you know, the US Secretary of State visit as well. But I, you know, from, you know, a lot of friends and former colleagues in New Guinea that it was a bit of a letdown. But I think the substance of the agreement kind of makes up for that as well.
Now is the time to ask the big question. Perhaps I should have began by asking it at the up top. What is it about PNG that is drawing the superpowers?
Well, I feel that at scale, Philip, I think, you know, PNG is the largest of the South Pacific Island nations. It's 9 million, almost 10 million. There's been a lot of sort of waiting for PNG's strategic intent about where it wants to, put its eggs in, or which basket it wants to put its eggs in. And it's not sort of been clear. I think, you know, Merape has thought about a strategy, but this is a continuation as well about being friends to all and enemies to none. You know, you and Tess mentioned at the top of the show Beijing's strategic interest in the region, and there's certainly a reaction to that that I think is driving this at a core level. But I think as well at the same time for nations like the US and Australia to actually form democratic partnerships with like-minded nations as well. I think that's a key driver too.
Tess, not surprisingly, Tonga has a new US embassy. Is there now any Pacific nation without one?
Well, it's interesting that you say that, Philip, because in her remarks to the meeting of leaders with Secretary of State Blinken, the Prime Minister of Samoa, was quite blunt in some of the things that she said. And one of the things that she said was, you know, it's all very well you having your USAID office in Fiji and the return of Peace Corps volunteers, but we want to see an embassy in Samoa. So if if you want us to take you seriously, you have to show up. And I think what that raises is an interesting point. Sean made the really important point of how significant Papua New Guinea is, not just by virtue of its location, but its size. But I think for these new players, one of the pitfalls is to think that if you've got PNG kind of ticked off, then everyone else will follow along. Sometimes they think that about Fiji, that you just get Fiji lined up and everyone else kind of follows along. And I think it's important to realise that the diversity of the region is such that that can't necessarily be guaranteed. And certainly Fiamme's comments would indicate that she's not as convinced of this as other people might be, and she wants to see more on the part of the US.
Sean, everyone wants to be the Pacific's bestie. What about you? Is this a boon for the region, or does it make you worry?
I'm probably not as worried, Philip, as others. I think if you break down the key issues where there are a lot of concerns, firstly, there's this issue or this concern around creeping militarization. You know, and if you look, for example, at PNG, there were concerns about, the agreement between the US and PNG enhancing any opportunity for the nation to serve as a battleground for the China-US conflict in the future. There's also exemptions that were offered to active US personnel that just simply weren't true, according to Merape, but that provoked a lot of concerns. And Tess has spoke really eloquently about this before and written a lot about it as well, but that just broader disproportionate attention that's currently being paid to Beijing's increasing security ties in the Pacific, but also just looking at everything through a security lens can undermine a lot of other initiatives as well. I think they're all valid, but I'm probably not as concerned as others about those.
Thank you both, the voices of Sean Jacobs. Sean is a PNG-born Brisbaneite. He's a writer and policy analyst. And, of course, Tess Newton-Kane is project leader at the Pacific Hub at Griffith Asia Institute.
ABC RN helps you understand the world. Find more of our stories on the ABC Listen app.